Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. Are you ready for an hour of Penn State football talk, Jeff?
Always ready to talk some Penn State football, Jim.
It's a good day when you get to talk football, even better when you can talk Penn State football, and even better than that when you get to talk about a win, a very nice win last weekend against Illinois, 21-7, after a slow start, dominating effort by the defense. But first up, Jeff, you and I got to watch the game together in the press box. There was some real whiteout energy for the game, and it got me to thinking that we're pretty fortunate to cover a team that has one of the best venues and best crowds for college football in the country.
No doubt. I think that setting with the tailgating scene and the fields around the stadium and Mount Nittany off in the background beyond the south end zone. And yes, when it's electric like that and you get that night atmosphere and the energy in that stadium, there are, I think, few places that can compare as far as overall atmosphere for a sporting event.
I've had some folks talk about that it was fun to have kind of the more spontaneous nature this weekend for the whiteout. Yes, it was kind of spontaneous, but you got to give James Franklin credit for making it happen.
No question. I'm with you 100%. And, you know, you do have to give the fans credit for responding, understanding the message and following through. And it was interesting, Jim, because I've talked to a few people this week about this, but in the lead up, it felt to me like the energy in the parking lot was not what it normally is for like a big game. And I was wondering whether or not, but as soon as you got into the stadium, it's like, oh no, it's here. So, you know, I think whether it was a good job by the fans of pacing themselves throughout the day or whatever it was, again, the energy in the stadium, no question, was there. And it was just, it was a fun atmosphere. And listen, you know, we talk about the impact that the fans can have on the game. Make no mistake, the fans impacted that game on Saturday night.
They were definitely a factor. And once more, I'm going to give James Franklin so much credit here. Post-game, he gave the fans, not only did he give them credit, hey, great crowd had an effect, he gave statistics on it.
Yeah.
We counted 7 plays where the fans had a factor. Jeff, I think that was the greatest part of the post game. James Franklin actually giving us statistics on the crowd effect.
Yep, I agree. It was wonderful. And I think it's fun from the Penn State perspective. And I also think, again, it does tell you that, you know, home field advantage. And as you look ahead here, and I am looking ahead to the possibility of a playoff game. Yep, getting one at Beaver Stadium with the weather and the fans, that could be a difference maker for sure.
Ever since they announced the 12-team playoff, Jeff, and the fact that there would be home playoff games, call me crazy, but I'm hoping that they don't get the bye because I want a home playoff game so badly.
Yeah. It's interesting. You're not the only one that's thinking along those lines. Goon Conlon has mentioned it a couple of times. It's like, I actually think I'd rather have that home game and be able to take that in than even have the first round bye. I will just leave it at this. I'm happy either way.
Well, I thought, I'll give credit where it's due, and I can't even remember which writer it was when the first announcement came out. I don't even know if it was official yet, Jeff, that they were doing the 12-team playoffs or just projecting it. And it talked about that first weekend of 4 games, and it was talking about having a night game. And this was a national writer. First thing he talked about was putting a night game at Penn State for a whiteout playoff game. I mean, this was a national writer. This is a national point of view. That's how much credence is given to the Penn State whiteout.
No, it would be just such an unbelievable opportunity. And obviously in the moment, as we move forward, that this will be, you know, obviously from a Penn State perspective, you'd love to see it be habitual, but it'll be less unique as the years go by. But for this first opportunity, man, what a special, special thing it would be if Penn State does get that chance.
I want to buy some stock in a company that has winter white jackets, Jeff.
Yep, I am with you. They're going to make a little bit of dough that week. That is for sure.
Most definitely. All right, let's take a look at things actually on the field. Again, I mentioned it was a 21-7 game for Penn State. What a great performance by the running backs. And I'm getting the sense from Andy Kotelnicki that oftentimes when you have an offensive guru, you know, these guys come in, it's about the passing game. You know, that's where they show themselves. I think that's where they make their money, showing that they could scheme a great passing game. But I think Andy Kotelnicki is saying, you know what, I'm going to go with what works here. And the running game was just crazy good against Illinois. And the statistic, and of course I don't have it sitting in front of me, but Jeff, I think it was 44 carries versus 21 passes in this Illinois game. Is this just a case of Andy Kotelnicki saying, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. We're running. Just keep running.
Yeah, I mean, I think you play to your overall strength, and not that Drew Aller isn't a strength, but I think with the offensive line and the way it's playing and the two running backs you have, you know, my one complaint, Jim, is that I think they've just got to do a better job of evening up the number of you know, maybe get them equally split. Oh, wait, it's exactly equally split. Never mind. If it's working, then it is working, and it's working very effectively. And I think we've talked about this before, Jim, but an effective passing game can obviously be terrific and can be every bit as effective as a good running game. I think the difference is, and I think you're starting to see it in the NFL a little bit this year, it is demoralizing to a defense when you get run on, when you get pounded over the course of a drive, and certainly over the course of a couple of drives or over a game. A big pass play or even a few pass plays, it's like, oh, okay, man, they caught us in the coverage or they caught us. Like, it's easy for the defense to at least excuse it and say, you know, nope, next time we'll line up better or we'll get to the quarterback or this or that. When you get bludgeoned with the running game, there's not much you can say. It's kind of like, oh, man, they just are manning up on us. And I think it is much more demoralizing for the players, and I think it's more demoralizing for the fans of a team when your defense just can't stop the run. That is, to me, a tougher psychological hurdle for a team and its fan base to overcome than giving up even more yardage or more big plays with a passing game.
And I think it's even more impressive, Jeff, that this was done against an Illinois team that prides themselves on being tough, physical, control the line of scrimmage. We're going to run on you, and you're not going to run on us.
Yeah, and I think that's been, you know, if you want to hang a question mark on this Penn State program the last couple of years, I think that the reason many folks, including me, would point to as to, man, why is Penn State not able to overcome Ohio State or Michigan? I really think it has come down to a toughness factor. And I think that was the question going into this Illinois game, was would Penn State be able to man up at the line of scrimmage, both sides of the ball, and at least hold its own? Well, Penn State didn't just hold its own. It dominated the line of scrimmage over the course of the four quarters. And I think that is a really good sign for what can come for this team down the road. They obviously still have to clean up some other things, and I'm sure we'll get into it. But I think that toughness factor at the line of scrimmage and just the physical ability to, again, control. And I think even against some of the better teams out there, Penn State will be able to hold its own this season if given that opportunity. That is a big, big deal for this team and where it wants to get to.
And even when Illinois was moving the ball early, it wasn't through running the ball. They were being stuffed. And the other part to this with running the ball is that toughness factor, which we saw. I'm not sure we saw this from Catron Allen and Nick Singleton as much as we saw the Illinois game. Those guys, they ran over people. They punished defensive players. It wasn't the other way.
No question, Jim. And I mean, there were several plays where you looked at both of them, and you talk about finishing off runs, lowering the shoulder and getting a couple of extra yards, not just, you know, dropping when somebody hits you. And that is, again, really important stuff when you start looking down the road and what this team, I think, is capable of doing, and then what it's going to need to do in those games in order to, you know, try to be one of the final four standing at the end of the year.
And I'll tell you what, the play that sticks out, and I've talked about this on earlier this week, shows Nick Singleton, when he caught the little swing pass, ran over a defender to get a first down. But earlier in the play, before he got all the way out, he was supposed to chip. It was either a defensive end or linebacker. Well, his chip was pancaking the guy, Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a heck of a chip. I'll take more chips like that, please, Alex, for 2,000 double jeopardy for the defense. Yeah, no, that was – you want to talk about a play that just kind of epitomizes the physical nature of Penn State Saturday night and the physical nature of those running backs. Yep, that was it, because all around, that was just a punishing play from Nick Singleton to the Illinois defense.
Yes, and it was plural. It was two guys that he ran over in the one play, and by the way, gets the first down also. Really impressive play. It was great to see. And it's fun to see as a fan. You could hear the fan reaction in the stadium when that kind of play happens. So I love when that happens, and I think all Penn State fans do. All right, Jeff, that is it for quarter number one. We got lots more to talk about. Stick with us. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Jeff Byers. We're talking Penn State football, a 21-7 win over Illinois last week. Jeff, we were talking about the running game and how tough they were. I know you mentioned it, but I want to bring it up again. When you have two running backs perform the way that Catron Allen and Nick Singleton did, for Allen, it was 103 yards. For Nick Singleton, it was 94 yards. They both averaged almost 6 yards a carry, but you got to have the offensive line performing too.
Well, and what is most impressive to me about that, Jim, is you're down in essence to your third guard on the one side, and there was no drop-off. I mean, none in terms of the performance and what Penn State was able to do at the line of scrimmage, and not that we're shocked by Cooper Cousins coming in and performing well, but man, it is a really good feeling, I think, for a coaching staff, for a team, for its fans, when you can go three deep onto a given roster spot and you're out there continuing to roll and really, again, dominate the line of scrimmage. That is a big deal. And that offensive line has really been everything I think fans could have expected and probably a little more back at the start of the season. You lost a, you know, three guys last year and, you know, a couple of, I think, studs. And I just think overall that offensive line is, I think by the end of the year, we're going to look back and say this line as a group was as good or better than the group a year ago. And certainly from a running perspective, better than a year ago.
When we came into the season, Jeff, and talked about the offensive line, we weren't sure how they would replace two NFL tackles and an NFL center, but they've done very well at it. And one of the things we talked about was the depth of the offensive line. They may not have the, you know, an Olu on this offensive line, but they were probably deeper than they were a year ago. So we're starting to see the benefits of that. It was interesting to me, Jeff, also reading up, you know, some fans' comments from the game. And there was, well, Drew Aller didn't have his best game, didn't play particularly well. Again, I'll point out, he didn't have many opportunities. He only threw the ball 21 times, but he still threw for over 70% completions. For a bad game, it wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I definitely was not a bad game. I do think there's – you're still looking for a little more consistency from him in terms of making the throws accurately every time. He still has you know, a couple of passes that I think he'd be the first to tell you he wants back on Saturday. That being said, his command of the offense, Jim, and his understanding of what it is they're trying to do, and you can see there's just a different zip when he needs to fire the ball in there. Again, there's a couple of times where it's like, oh, man, want that one back. But there's also several passes now, I think in every game this season, where you're like, ooh, okay, that looked big time. And that is special. And I think as the season progresses, there's going to be some moments where he needs to step up. And I just have a lot more confidence now that that part will be taken care of. And the other factor there is that receiving core, Jim. They are not dropping the ball this year. And I'm going to knock on my couch cushion here because I don't have wood right in front of me. But really, the with one exception that I can think of, they've just not had problems in terms of the drops that they had a year ago.
And the other part of that, and I've said it over and over and over again, Jeff, I don't want to hear the announcer ever say the quarterback and receiver were not on the same page. We haven't seen those kind of misses either. And as you said about, we see that big time arm and what he could do. The other part to this is in the couple games where both Bowling Green and Illinois, the opponent marched right down the field with the kickoff, scored, put Penn State behind early, and both times Drew Aller and the offense answered. In prior years, it felt like the offense always started slow. God forbid we'd see the opponent march down, score, and then that ugly three and out would happen. And that has not happened. When there has been that pressure of falling behind early, the offense has responded, and so has Drew Aller.
Yeah, and I think that's beneficial in a couple of ways, Jim. Obviously, it gets the score back to even, and it gets the offense in a rhythm and some confidence there. But the other part of it is, when the defense gives up a drive like that, and then you go three and out, there's not a lot of time for adjustment there, and there's not a lot of time for everybody to catch their breath and just say, oh, okay, nope, we're going to be okay. When you see your offense march down the field like that, one, it's giving you some time. Hey, let's talk through what we saw out there. Let's talk through what adjustments we can make. Let's catch our breath. You are back and ready to go full steam. And also now you have the confidence that, you know what, it's not necessarily that we have to go pitch a shutout. This offense just showed that it's pretty good too. So I do think it's big, not just in answering that immediate score, but in terms of the complementary aspect of football, where now your defense goes out with maybe a little more confidence, a little more understanding, and certainly a little more energy than if you go three and out and the other team is getting the ball back, by the way, with probably good field position with that lead intact.
And it's also, from the opposition's perspective, Illinois must have thought, look, we marched down the field, we scored, that's the perfect start. If we could get Penn State's offense off the field from our perspective, we're in great shape. We're shaping this game exactly how we want it. We could then continue with the lead, playing with the lead. Illinois plays differently, Jeff.
No question, as most teams do. And I think that is, you're keeping the pressure on an opponent, and you're keeping the crowd very much in the game. Right. Like we talked about, yes, that energy. Well, that energy can subside a bit if you're in a hole for an extended period of time. That energy never subsided because Penn State came right back, and that was a tight game throughout the first half. And then you just kind of felt Penn State pulling away as the second half unfolded.
You know, Jeff, prior to the season, one of the things we talked about was obviously the two new coordinators, and that it might take a couple games for them to reach their stride. We'll talk about Tom Allen and the defense in a little bit. But on offense with Andy Kotelnicki, it's beginning to feel like he's getting also his feet beneath him, figuring out what he has on offense. And one of the things he's figured out is, oh, by the way, this tight end, Tyler Warren, I could put in a package with him at Wildcat quarterback.
Yeah, that's worked out okay for them so far. Maybe go ahead and keep that in the overall offensive package. It is really unbelievable, the skill set that Tyler Warren brings, because it's one of those things where it's not just that he's making the big plays when he's given those opportunities. If you go back and look at the way this guy blocks when he is called upon to block, this is about as complete a tight end as you could possibly imagine. And obviously has great hands, great athleticism. That leap into the end zone was something to behold. The fact that you have a tight end that can throw a touchdown pass, it's fun. And I think the neat thing is, this offense, I don't think it has to rely on that, but it is cool that that's an extra element now that you have. And, you know, I think we've talked about it from the start, Jim, but there are just so many different ways this offense can beat you. There's such versatility with how they can go about putting different things in. And I think they can just continue to add wrinkles with Bo Pribula, with Tyler Warren, obviously with Drew Aller, and with the receiving core and the tight end group that they have. I just think you're going to see more and more different ways that this offense finds ways to beat opponents as the season rolls on. And with the way the schedule plays out, all of that should be on the table, and they should be confident about the way it is run by the time they get to what is unquestionably the biggest game of the year, when Ohio State visits that first Saturday in November.
And it's interesting, Jeff, you called Tyler Warren maybe the most complete tight end in the country. I'm saying he's maybe the most complete offensive player, because you don't typically ask your tight end to line up at quarterback or throw a pass or run from the quarterback position. And I think even perhaps more importantly, they have him running the read option, where he's also got to make decisions as the quarterback. And that often is whether to give the ball up to the running back or keep it himself. Many guys in that kind of position, it's very simple. They just keep the ball and run it every time. That's not been the case, and his decision-making's been so good.
I just have to believe that sitting in the film room when this team goes over the game film, that Tyler Warren and Nicholas Singleton and many of the other guys, like, genuinely look forward to it, because you know, when Singleton with that chip lock and the run over, like there were oohs and ahs in that room. And it's like, all right, let's watch that again. And he's getting all kinds of praise. And Tyler Warren, I don't know how you wouldn't be soaking up every moment of adulation from your teammates and coaches with the performances he's putting on week in and week out. And yeah, there's just so many different ways that they can scheme him and use him as either a decoy now in a particular situation or as the guy that opposing defenses have to try to figure out how to slow down, because I don't think you're going to stop him, but try to figure out how to slow down a bit.
Okay. Here's my only issue, Jeff. I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a lover of alliteration, okay? The LeVar leap. Love that, right? For Tyler Warren and his jump, what do we do with that?
Oh, man. Now you're going to have me thinking, because I am also a big fan. Being illiterate myself, I like alliteration. Oh, wait. touchdown Tyler, that's a little too – yeah, I got to think about that one. There's got to be something we can come up with.
Yes, you would think there would be. We're two pretty smart guys, Jeff. You'd think we'd be able to come up with something. However, right off the top of my head, I don't have it. But maybe our listeners will. They could send us in something. All right, that is it for quarter number two. A lot more to go. Stick around.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number three. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. And I can tell you folks right now, Jeff spent the entire time between segments trying to think up something to, like, the LeVar leap, the same way for Tyler Warren. Jeff, have you come up with anything?
Nothing that I'm proud of. I'm giving it more thought.
All right. We'll have to work on that one. So we talked mostly offense the first two segments, Jeff. I want to switch over, talk defense. And this was another game. Defense started slow. When I say another, it felt like Bowling Green, did it not? It's like a transfer veteran quarterback on fire to start, that short passing game, march right down the field and score. And I think a lot of folks were doing, uh-oh, here we go again with that kind of offense. But the defense seemed to make the adjustment quicker than they did against Bowling Green, and pretty much shut Illinois down after that first drive.
I thought it was really impressive, because I do think that is a good Illinois offense. And I'll be interested to see, as the season goes on, how Illinois does against some other good defenses in the conference. But I really thought Tom Allen, and I mentioned the offensive line with the injuries, that defense has suffered a couple of key injuries as well. And I thought both the schemes that Tom Allen came up with, but also, Jim, we had several players have outstanding games on Saturday night. And I think it bodes really well for what this team can do in the future. I mean, you start with Zane Durant up front. I thought Kobe King just was absolutely all over the place, impacting the game. And Jalen Reed, of course, is what we know he is, and just is still a constant playmaker as well. But just across the board, I thought Penn State really stepped up in big moments consistently and made plays on Saturday night.
And I think also, Jeff, it's funny, before the season we talked in terms of the new coordinators and maybe taking a few games before they would adjust. Once the season started, though, we ran out of patience. We weren't willing to wait for that. But it feels like that adjustment is being made, and we're seeing it happen. I'm going to start, though, with Abdul Carter at defensive end. And again, we expected him to be an All-American right out of the gate from game one. It feels like he's now, not only is he adjusting to it, but it feels like Tom Allen is also adjusting to him and how to use him.
Well, one of the things that is fun about watching and covering this team is the versatility. I mentioned it with Tyler Warren on offense, but when you look at all of the different ways they can utilize Abdul Carter and in given spots can drop him back in as a linebacker, put him in different areas. You can obviously use him to rush the passer, but you can also use him on run blitzes, and you can use him to drop back into coverage. And I just think when you have special athletes and you have coaches who know how to use them, and it's not just a one-trick pony, that is what gives your team, I think, a chance to develop into something special. And there's no question that Tyler Warren and Abdul Carter are just very special athletes, but I also think they have coaching staff now that really understands how to utilize their talents and how to give them the optimal chance to really benefit from their talents game in and game out.
And when you have an Abdul Carter, I don't think he had a player like that at Indiana his whole time there. So now that you do, it seemed like there was more of Abdul Carter not lining up at defensive end, but he was lined up like right in the middle of the defense. And if you're a quarterback and you see Abdul Carter standing right there in front of you, and it's like, all right, what's this guy going to do? And you had, sometimes he was coming, sometimes he was spying the quarterback, and sometimes he was dropping back in coverage, or at least that's the way it looked to me, Jeff.
Yeah, and you know, one of the other problems, so if it's one guy, you might be able to account for that. And he is certainly the most versatile, and they're using him, as you said, in a bunch of different ways. But it's like, okay, well, we'll just try to run away from him. Really, you're going to try to run it tonight, Dennis Sutton, all night? Good luck with that. Oh, wait, we got to keep track of where's Kobe King now? Oh, that's fine. We got him tracked. Oh, wait, it's Tony Rojas on the other side. Like, this is where, again, I just think having a coordinator who knows how to use these guys, and then having the experience that Penn State has now and the depth that Penn State has, is really paying dividends. And I think will pay bigger dividends as this season plays out.
And a bit of a programming note here is we post, for those of you who haven't seen some of the videos from For the Bloggy, I really suggest you check out their YouTube channel. We often post them on our app. And Coach Caduti did a video this week looking at the Penn State defense, and he really goes in depth on a couple plays, Jeff. It's fun to watch. And there was one in particular where, again, it's showing Abdul Carter over the center. Now, the center, he's seeing him. He sees the double sticks, okay? So he's got to be conscious of them. Well, guess what? All of a sudden, Zane Durant has one-on-one with the guard. The center's not helping him because not even out of the corner of his eye, but right in front of him is Abdul Carter, who he is so fearful is coming. Well, Abdul Carter wasn't coming, but the center was looking for him. And guess what? One-on-one, Zane Durant, he beat his guy senseless. And makes a big play. Abdul Carter doesn't get into the stat sheet on that play, but he was a huge part of it.
That's the benefit of having a guy who you know is the playmaker that Abdul Carter is. Just as, again, you can use Tyler Warren on the other side of the ball as a bit of a decoy. You can kind of do that same thing here with Abdul Carter on defense on given plays. But if you're on the offense, right, you have to be accounting for him on every play. And yeah, everybody is going to be aware of where he is, and you better be ready for if he is coming. And yeah, that's, again, the advantage of having special athletes is you make the other team have to prepare every play to handle them. And it does help open things up for the other players. And Penn State has an abundance of other players who can step up and make plays as well.
And Jeff, we talked about the effect the fans had on the game. Now, in this game, first half, it was tight. It was 7-7, well into the second quarter. And Illinois was getting ready to score. If there was a turning point in this game, Illinois at the 2-yard line, first and goal, going into the student section. Next thing you know, bad snap over the quarterback's head, and it was like the switch went off. Illinois ends up with a missed field goal. To me, that was the point where the fans had its biggest effect, and from there on, it was just total domination by the Penn State defense.
It was, and I think there was just a different level of confidence from that same from that point of the game on. And I agree with you. If you're looking for the point where kind of everything started to roll Penn State's way, that was it, because it was a combination of the defense stepping up, Illinois making some mistakes, and then the fans knowing that they were having an impact on the game and the way that thing was playing out. And I think all of those things combined to just maybe make Illinois a little less confident for the remainder of the game, but it certainly provided a ton of confidence on the Penn State side of the field.
Well, it sort of seemed to work, because come third quarter, can I read some stats to you for the third quarter, Jeff? Can I?
Overwhelming. Please do.
Penn State had 21 plays for 112 yards and 6 first downs. That's the third quarter. Illinois, 5 plays, 11 yards, and 0 first downs.
I'll be honest with you, Jim. If given the choice as a coach, I would prefer my team had Penn State stats than Illinois'.
You are a football genius, Jeff. You really are. And what we also saw from that defense, Jeff, I thought, and maybe it's getting the lead or the adjustment at halftime, but there was a new aggressiveness to the defense, so similar to what we saw a year ago. And again, I'm going to plug the For the Bloggy, showing the plays where there's the 7-man front, which is my favorite defense. From, yes, I'll mention them again because of my man crush on Manny Diaz. 7 men up front, and that offense has zero clue as to who and how many players are coming.
And that's the versatility of the defense and having a guy like Tom Allen in charge and understanding what he has, and then having a more veteran defense, especially with that front 7 that has the understanding of, okay, this is what I can adjust to. This is where I need to get to in terms of gap assignments and all of that. And yeah, again, I think for as good as Penn State looked, and I do think they looked really good Saturday night, I think this thing is just going to keep getting better and better as the season goes along. And it's going to need to. I mean, that USC game is looming here, Jim, and I think that is obviously going to be a big challenge in a few different ways. A very good team, but obviously then going across the country and everything that comes with that as well.
You're definitely right. And Jeff, I'll give you credit, because I believe you even talked about this before the season, that it was going to take these few games for those coordinators to be up to speed with what they have, how to utilize it, and it would shape up exactly the way you want when they hit that heart of the schedule, which they will, and starting in a couple weeks, that's when they'd be at full strength.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this UCLA game is going to be a good opportunity again to just work on some things and kind of refine your game heading into that USC matchup.
Exactly the case. All right, Jeff, that's it for quarter three. We got one more quarter to go. Stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hall Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Jeff, we're not at this point yet, but I'm giving you the heads up because I know you need reminders. Towards the end of this segment, I will need your prediction for the week and your bold prediction, okay? You've been warned. You could think about it till we get there, all right?
Indeed.
Okay. Before we get there, I did want to talk to you about a few plays in this Illinois game, a couple of the decisions that were made, and just how much influence the kicking game had on these decisions. It was interesting to see. But the first one, end of the first quarter, literally the very end of the first quarter, Penn State has the ball on their own 41, and it's fourth and one. Maybe it's just James Franklin had that whole quarter break to think about it, but he ended up punting on that. You know me, I'm the guy who typically wants to go for it. What did you think of that decision?
I really felt in retrospect, I actually think it was the right decision in the moment. Jim, I'm watching the way Penn State's running the ball, and I'm thinking, man, if you can't get a yard with the way they're running and you know, the backs you have, I'd be shocked. And so, but I really do think part of it was playing the field position game and the field seemed slanted a little in Illinois' favor in terms of the starting point of the drives in that first half. So in the moment, I would have gone for it. But I don't have a problem, and really, I would argue now in hindsight, that probably was the right decision.
Well, from my perspective, as I said, I'm typically the guy who wants to go for it, okay? So I, at the moment, I said, go for it. In hindsight, I still think they should have gone for it. But with that said, I think I understand why they didn't. My look at it is that I feel like Penn State was the better team than Illinois. The only way Illinois, I felt, could win that game is if they got the breaks, if they got a turnover, if they, you know, get the fourth and one stop, which is always a possibility, and get a short field. That was Illinois' path to winning this game. So I think, and I will give James Franklin credit, not necessarily that I agree with the call, but I think he was using his feel for the game as opposed to, hey, analytics say you go for it. And that's an area that I've been critical of James for, that I didn't think he would always use a feel for the game. He'd often go straight analytics, and it might turn against him.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you in terms of Saturday night and what they felt going in and kind of what they had seen early on, even with that first drive by Illinois, Jim. I mean, Penn State was, you know, a whisker here, a whisker there away from having that drive stopped a couple of times. And so I think they did feel good about if we can win the field position battle and yes, not give Illinois momentum, without them necessarily earning it, that they were in good shape. And in retrospect, and even in the moment, it wasn't like, oh, this is egregious. I can't believe they would punt here. I just, in the moment, I felt that they should go for it. I really do think you're smarter in that situation to play the field position game. And with the way Penn State was playing on both lines of scrimmage, not give Illinois an opportunity to seize any kind of momentum.
As you said, perhaps the smartest decision, but Jeff, I don't always make smart decisions. So go for it. Well, there were a couple other times when James Franklin had to make a decision on fourth down. In fact, three times where he had to decide either to kick or go for it. And in order, he chose field goal, then went for it, then field goal. He was 0-for-3 on those three decisions, Jeff. Any look at those in hindsight? Well, in hindsight, it's easy. He should have done the opposite of whatever he decided because it didn't work out. But at the moment, how do you judge those decisions?
Well, I was actually okay with all of them. They have got to get the, stating the obvious, but they've got to get the field goal situation figured out. And much easier said than done, because they're putting Sahadic out there because he is the most consistent in practice. And so that makes sense that you're putting him out there. I don't know now. It feels like this is something that may be in his head now, Jim, in terms of the game situations. I think it's a really tough call for the coaches if Sahadak continues to be the most consistent in practice. And, you know, they're going to replicate the game situation as best they can in practice. And if Sahadak keeps coming through, you know, you're hoping, I guess, if you're a Penn State fan, that on the other end of this is a Sam Ficken who goes on to the NFL and everything works out great. But we're far enough into the career and the season here that you have these questions. It's just, if the other guys are less consistent in practice, how confident are you that they're just going to come out here and be the magic remedy in game situations? So regardless of the decisions there in that Illinois game, I think the decisions moving forward become more difficult, because there will be times where it's like, yeah, you just obviously take the sure three here. The problem is, it's not a sure three here.
And don't you have to, for the UCLA game, look at it, Jeff, like, at what point is it, hey, I can't just base it on what happens in practice. I have to factor in the game situation. And he's, what, 1-for-4 so far this season? And you have to factor that in. And you have a game here where the feeling is it won't be competitive. Do you not have to get another kicker out there and see what he could do in game situation so you have someone ready for USC?
I think you do. I think the very real danger and concern is, all right, if he goes out there and misses, I mean, they have three kickers, I get it. But again, the reason that Sahadak has been out there is he has been the most consistent in practice. I'm with you that I think you need to maybe at least give one of the other guys a try. The problem is it just becomes an even higher mountain to climb if he goes out there and misses. You know, let's say they have a 35-yarder, you put him out there and he hooks it wide left. That's the negative thinking. Obviously, if he comes out there and hits it and then makes a 48-yarder, later, then you have at least confidence moving forward. But again, I think you're going to be holding your breath the rest of the season, regardless of how this plays out against UCLA, when Penn State sends out its field kicking crew. And if it is in a clutch situation, you're just going to be keeping your fingers crossed and obviously hoping for the very best.
Well, I think the kid from Tulsa was 17-for-20. At there last year, which means he missed three all season. Okay. Sahadak has now missed three of his first four. I've got to look at that. I know Tulsa may be different than Penn State, but It's the same kind of feel. You know, kicking a field goal is kicking a field goal. Yeah. It's the same at Tulsa as it is at Penn State. So I think that warrants at least a try. All right, Jeff, time to look forward. We're looking at UCLA at Penn State Saturday at noon. This is not a good UCLA team at all, is it?
Well, it's not. And the bad news for the Bruins is, as we're recording this, Jim, their quarterback, Ethan Garbers, has not practiced yet this week. He went out with an injury late in that Oregon game. Not that you were, you know, fretting over this game if you're a Penn State fan if he does play, but without him, I really don't see how the Bruins scheme anything up to be able to keep this competitive over the course of four quarters. So, yeah, I just think this is a game where, from the Penn State perspective, you're really just focused on getting some things crisp. Here's an idea, Jim. I would say maybe in practice this week, maybe work on not giving the easy penalty yardage. Maybe work on not jumping offsides. Just a thought I had. It occurred to me. I'm kidding. I realize it's been a point of emphasis the last few weeks in practice. It just needs to remain so, because they really do have to get that cleaned up with USC and Ohio State looming here in the coming weeks.
And those things are just a question of discipline, Jeff. It's the same way with the late hits and, you know, things like that. That's where we've seen too much of. And there's got penalties happen in the game. We know that. But just those unnecessary ones, please, please, please clean those up. All right, Jeff, with the 2 minutes we have left, need a prediction from you, and we need a bold prediction from you.
My prediction is, I just think this Penn State defense dominates, and I think the offense will come up with enough big plays to make this a really fun watch for the fans. I'll say UCLA somehow gets a garbage score late, but I have it Penn State 45, UCLA 10.
Not a bad pick. All right. Now we need a bold prediction from you, Jeff.
So I am going to say that Penn State goes 2-for-2 in field goal attempts on Saturday.
Wow. 2-for-2. That is going out on a limb, considering the team has only made one field goal in its first four game and was only 1-for-4.
Yep.
Well, Jeff, I'm going with 40-7. Yes, that's covering the spread. It's a 28-point spread or so. So, yes, I think Penn State will beat the spread. I think that James Franklin will make sure that they do. If it's in doubt, he'll get us degenerates that extra touchdown to make sure that we cash in.
There you go.
For a bold prediction, I'm not sure how to shape it, but I think that they're going to – they've been so reliant on the running game. I think they're going to come out throwing the ball. I'm going to say Drew Aller with 3 touchdown passes in the first half, Jeff. How's that?
I like it. That is bold.
I think they want to establish something there with the passing game. All right, Jeff, that is it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.